Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Join us on Thursday as we explore Pet Health and Homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath Debbie Bruck, and Doctor of Veterinary Medicine, author and homeopath Christina Chambreau. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, speaking with our co-host, Christina Chambreau, doctor of veterinary medicine. Today is April 26, 2012. This is a wonderful show that we have together today, talking about how to get started with homeopathy. And if you're a pet lover, if you're into health and well-being, if you want to know how to take care of your pet, or if you are in the health field, you would probably be interested in today's show because Dr. Chambreau is giving workshops this summer coming up, and she's going to talk about that today. Also, we encourage you to send in your comments and questions. We will address those on the air. We can even create an entire show about your question, which we have done in the past. Please friend, favorite, and download the archives so you can conveniently listen to these shows in your car, on your iPod or iTunes, whatever your mobile cell device, and your computer. Also, you can link onto the Blog Talk Radio show page and the Homeopathy World Community webpage to learn more about Christina, where we have so many shows listed. And what else do we want to tell you? That you can find Dr. Christina Chambreau at www.myhealthyanimals.com. She's in Maryland and is the adjunct faculty for the Maryland Veterinary Technician Program. She speaks widely across the country and does telephone consultations. So if you have a question, a personal question, and need her help, give her a call. And I was just taking a look, Christina, at some quotes from Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
And that's by Richard Bach, who's just an incredible author. And he's written many, many more books. So, well, not many more, but he's written more books. So I encourage people who remember Jonathan Livingston Seagull and who like these quotes to look for Illusions and Bridge Across Forever and the book One, O-N-E. Let's hear these quotes.
Okay, well, this is one. It says, Jonathan is raising his voice against the council. Quote, it says, who is more responsible than a gull who finds and follows meaning, a higher purpose for life? For 1,000 years, we have scrabbled after fish heads. But now we have a reason to live, to learn, to discover, to be free, unquote.
Mm.
So at this point in his life, I suppose he has gone through a lot of difficulties, feeling weighed down, and now he really does want to fly. And so he says also, what he had once hoped for the flock, he now gained for himself alone. He learned to fly and was not sorry for the price that he had paid. And I suppose each one of us in our own little way has been through something, that we're part of a group and we also have to find our individuality, and that the prices that we pay to move on in life can be quite high. He says one more, let's see. Jonathan Seagull discovered that boredom and fear and anger are the reasons that Gull's life is so short. And with these gone from his thought, He lived a long, fine life indeed. So I'm going to have to go back and read that whole story to put into place where these quotes belong in the sequence of events. But that sounds quite as if it's near the end, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Because he's already, you know, clear on things. He's not in the middle of questioning and not sure.
Okay.
So I'm not sure we ever get totally clear in our own lives, especially in terms of anything.
In terms of anything. We're always questioning. We're always balancing what we know and what we don't know, what we are certain about, what we are uncertain about. But I think that there's maybe that little inner spark of faith that keeps us going.
And there's also an inner knowing. And I really encourage everybody who's listening to this to learn how to tap into their inner knowing. One way is with two people to do applied kinesiology, which many have heard of. That's the pushing down on the arm. You can use by yourself, you can use pendulums, you can use other muscle testing techniques that you can use by yourself. You can go inside and meditate and listen for that inner voice as to what's right and what pushes you, what's the next step to take. And in terms of health, one of the things that's very important to realize, because we don't hear this from our conventional veterinarians and we don't hear this from the media, even holistic media, is that health is a journey. It's not a place we get to and stay there in a static way. It's a journey. And sometimes we try something that just doesn't work. And other times we try something that seduces us and we think it works. You have a cup of coffee in the morning to wake you up and you think, wow, this is good. And then at 10 o'clock you're feeling down, so you have some sugar and that wakes you up. Good, this is working. But then you look back over time and notice that maybe your overall health is not doing as well. So may or may not. I'm not saying that that this is true for everybody. But it's a matter of sometimes you're seduced into thinking that the health choices you're making are good ones, and sometimes they're not. When I got started in homeopathy in 1981 or 82, it took me a few years, probably until 87 or thereabouts, 87, 88, of doing a lot of studying with different practitioners, including Dr. Richard Pitcairn, who wrote Natural Health for Dogs and Cats and teaches the homeopathy training course for veterinarians to train veterinarians in homeopathy. And finally, when I appreciated The Organon, the book written by Samuel Hahnemann, when I really understood the basic principles, and I'm still learning so much, there's so much I don't know, but once I understood the basic principles of homeopathy, it changed my view on the entire field of health for animals and for people. And a lot of times, you know, there are not a lot of courses on homeopathy that are available in the United States. There are some, but they're not a lot. There are a lot of study groups, and some study groups, you learn in the study group classes the basic principles of homeopathy, whether they're for animals or people. There are a lot of classes for homeopathy for people. Now, some of those classes for people, or for animals maybe, but definitely the ones for people, ignore the principles of homeopathy and simply talk to you about how to use homeopathic remedies for specific conditions. Now, while this isn't a bad thing, you're missing the keys of homeopathy. So if you're in a study group for homeopathy and you're merely talking about which remedies for colds, which remedies for colicky babies, which remedies for this condition or that condition, pick up the Organon and start your study group studying the Organon or using one of the many books that explains the Organon. the Tholkus's basic book, Science of Homeopathy, the chapter 2 and 3 in Don Hamilton's book, Homeopathic Care of Cats and Dogs, and many more. So the key thing is it doesn't matter how short or how long the class is. It needs to cover some basic principles. So I'm going to be teaching in Portland, Oregon very, very soon, and I am hoping that enough people hear about it that those who want to come show up. I have one coming down from Seattle and one coming from farther away in Oregon. So on May 6th, I'm doing a four-hour introduction to homeopathy for animals. And it's going to be at the Naturopathic College. And hopefully we'll have Dr. Moore, who's a naturopathic doctor, speaking some about the bond between people and animals and how you need to often treat people and get them well in order to have the animals become well or get them moving forward on the journey of health. And in this four-hour class, just like I'm doing right now in this 45-minute class, is these are the basic things you want to be learning. So anytime you're checking in on a class, it's great to learn different remedies and learn materia medica and learn what remedies are good for different problems. But you want to be sure you periodically and certainly at the beginning learn these basic things. So number one is the history and principles of homeopathy. Number two, I'm going to give an overview and then we'll go back in detail on them. Number two is you need to learn how to do what in homeopathy we call taking the case or case taking. In veterinary medicine, it's called the intake. And sometimes we call it that in homeopathy as well. The next is you need to understand how remedies are made so that you understand how to choose potencies, that you understand that remedies, even though they're made out of things like rabid dog saliva, because of how they're prepared, they're absolutely fine and safe to use, safe-ish to use. They're not going to cause rabies. And then learning how to select the remedy, or learning how remedies are tested, that they're proved on healthy animals, very rarely animals. I'm sorry, they're tested on healthy people, very rarely on animals. And that is how we collect the symptoms about the remedy. And then we learn about books, the repertory, the materia medica, computer programs, websites, where you can learn how to match, how to select the remedy by matching the testing symptoms of a remedy with the symptoms that you found from the animal. And then you have to know how to administer the remedy, what potency to give, how often to give the remedy, and for how long you have to be giving it or waiting after you've given it. Then you need to know how to evaluate the response of the animal or person to the remedy. Is it cure, palliation, or suppression? And finally, and this is especially true for animals, probably for people too, but again, I'm a veterinarian, so my expertise is here, the obstacles to cure. Hahnemann spoke about these, and boy, do we ever see them in animals. Poor diet, too many vaccines, too many chemical toxins, environmental toxins, emotions of the family, life circumstances, how they're being treated, all of those can prevent an animal from getting well. So that's the overview that whether it's this half-hour class, 45-minute that we're doing now, or a four-hour class that I'm teaching in Portland, Oregon in the afternoon, Sunday afternoon, May 6th, or June 2nd and 3rd, I'm up in Maine, and we'll be doing a two-day course on it, or Bowie, Maryland, as part of a entire two-week summer school with multiple different subjects being taught, I'll do a one-day introduction to homeopathy and a five-day course on homeopathy. So whether it's a 45-minute or a five-day course, this is really what you need to learn about homeopathy. Or if it's a year-long training course or a three-year-long training course, which are available for non-veterinarians around in different ways, offered by different places. So whatever it is, this is what you need to know.
Okay, so
you've been doing this for a long time, Debbie, so does this make sense that this is the basics of what you need to know?
Yes, you have to get started by listening and being there in person with somebody who is well-trained and well-experienced that can answer your questions, because you're going to have a lot of questions. And so I just want to review again. You're going to be in Oregon Sunday, May 6th.
Yes, for a four-hour intro.
Four-hour intro. And then you're going to be in Maine June 2nd.
And 3rd for a two-day intro.
Two-day, okay. And then in Maryland,
June 16th to 22.
Okay, June 16th to 22. Okay. And so we'll put this up on the Homeopathy World Community website in the group for you. And the best way to contact you would be what? To sign
at my
up.
Website, My Healthy Animals. And then go to the events page, and there'll be links to each of them.
Okay.
Unless you want to type the links in the chat room as you're going along from the document I sent you that had all the links.
I will just put myhealthyanimals.com there, and folks can find it.
Okay.
Yep.
Very good.
Yep.
So,
okay.
But now that and it doesn't have to be an in-person class, although it's certainly more fun and you certainly get your questions answered more quickly. But there are internet classes that you can take to study homeopathy for animals as well as homeopathy for people, and then it just takes a little longer to get your questions answered. And some people do this just by reading. Dr. Pitcairn, back in the early 80s, stumbled on homeopathy, and he trained himself entirely by reading the Organon, Science of Homeopathy, Compton Burnett, the James Kent's lectures on homeopathy. So he studied the old masters and trained himself to understand all of this. Now it's much easier. There's lots more available, isn't there, Debbie, than there was 20, 30 years ago?
Absolutely. You have your choice of things that you can go to and listen to. And so...
In your experience, Debbie, of the things I've covered, history and principles, case-taking, remedy, selection, potency, evaluation of response, and obstacles to cure, which are the ones that you feel people have more trouble understanding?
I think that people, in the first place, find obstacles to cure make sense. So, and then they can see and feel and notice in their own life what is blocking them from moving forward. I mean, and people walk in the door and they say, you know, I just can't stop eating or drinking coffee, or I just, you know, they're all jittery and they're drinking 10 cups a day. Or
they say, it seems like every time my dog gets vaccinated, something happens.
Right, in terms of animals. Right. Mm-hmm. In terms of animals, I suppose my dog is not getting out enough because I'm not taking them out, so they're missing the either the exercise or the social interaction, which they probably would need. You know, things like that you can.
So that's an easy one.
Yeah.
So what are some of the harder ones for people to grasp of homeopathy?
I would say the hardest thing is selecting potency and evaluating response, because you have to be very observant in terms of evaluating the response to notice what those changes are that are occurring and to note them down in your journal. And then the potency selection is probably the hardest thing for most people, to know what potency to give, how often, when to repeat, when not to repeat, and just let the remedy work a little bit longer, those kinds of things.
Okay. Well, let's start. I think the key to understanding potency is actually understanding how to evaluate the response to remedies. Because much of what you said, they don't know when to repeat it, they don't know when to wait, that's all part of evaluation of response. So the first thing I'm going to say about potency, because we do have just a short time here, so I want to focus on what we think may be most important, The first thing I want to say about potency is Kent, James Kent from 1900 said, if you have the correct remedy, it doesn't matter what potency you give. So that's one thing to know about potencies. Not always true, but more or less true in my experience. The second thing is that the lower-ish potencies, like a 30C or a 12C, tend to have more of a scatter effect. So if you do, if you have a close remedy but not the correct remedy, your animal may feel better and some of the symptoms will go away. And that's enough to get you feeling good that, okay, homeopathy is doing something. And then if you go up higher in potency, maybe the remedy stops working because it's not the right remedy. But starting on the lower side gives you that benefit of sort of boosting the energy field, the vital force of the animal, so they start feeling better. And some symptoms may go away, which makes them feel even better. So the third about potency is if you have, it's something I didn't put in this handout, but we may have talked about it before, animals and people become ill in a progression. First, there's an energetic imbalance. You just know your animal's not well, but you have nothing to base it on. If you go to a veterinarian, and sometimes I've had people when I was in conventional medicine come into the clinic and say, I just know my cat's sick. And I go, well, what's wrong? I don't know. She's still eating. She's still moving. She's, you know, I don't know, but I know she's sick. Well, as a conventional veterinarian, I couldn't do anything with that. As a homeopath, I can't do anything with that unless there's a prior remedy that we know worked. So at that point, you would use Reiki or flower essences or something much more general healing, HTA, T-touch, massage. If that's not treated properly, the next stage of illness is a functional illness. And a functional illness would be a dog scratching all the time, but there's no raw sores. The skin's not red. The hair is falling out a little bit where he scratches, but not much. There's no bald areas. You can't find fleas. There's no mange. You don't know what's causing the scratching. Or it's a cat that's frequently going to the litter box, maybe urinating small amounts. But when you do it, your analysis is completely normal. So there's no apparent cause. You do an x-ray and there's no stone. You can't figure out what's causing it. Homeopathy is brilliant at that level. And you can use even fairly high potencies there. Behavioral issues are usually in that area, in the functional level. If that's not treated properly and the vital force becomes more ill, it then will create inflammation, which means redness, pain, heat, swelling, or loss of function. So the animal will have, the dog now has hot spots. The dog now has bright red skin. The cat now has, the urinalysis shows white cells, red cells, maybe some crystals. There may be a fever with either the dog or the cat. Finally, if that's not treated properly, we move into tissue changes or pathology. That's where we have bladder stones, lots of crystals, thickened bladder wall. The skin has turned black and thick, and there's no hair. It's so as you move down towards less health, towards the tissue pathology, you're going to need lower and lower potencies. So if you have a cat who's in kidney failure or a dog whose skin is really, not so much skin because I wouldn't worry about it as much, but if you have a really severe diabetic animal where the pancreas, the tissue damage in the pancreas is probably severe if you did a biopsy, which I don't recommend, at that point, you need low potencies repeated frequently. If you have a functional illness with, basically they feel pretty good, but they got something going on, and it's usually a pretty high energy thing, and it's a big hot spot, or it's a big red flare, or it's a lot of itching, then you go with a higher potency, because the higher potency has that hardness to it. And so that's just a general guideline, again. And different prescribers find different ways to use remedies. I know Dr. Wendy Jensen, who's been on the board of the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy in many positions, including editor of our journal for years, at one point after practicing homeopathy for about 10 years, she realized that even with cats with kidney failure, so way down there in the tissue level, that if she went with a high potency, like a 1M or a 10M, she could get dramatic healings that actually were very gentle. The problem was if she gave the incorrect remedy, it would cause all sorts of problems, and so she'd have to be there to pick up the pieces. So as she got better, even at the lower levels of tissue pathology, she could be more bold with her potency selection. So that's a little bit about potency. Does that help some?
That helps a lot. You covered a lot of ground on that. Yeah, I think people can understand. The one thing, though, that maybe questions would occur is when you said if you give a 1M or a 10M, which is a high potency prescription for a homeopathic remedy, that if the remedy is on target, is correctly selected, that we're going to see a beautiful result. But if it's not correct, why would it even cause any change if it's not resonating with the animal, if the selection is not
close,
correct?
One of the keys for knowing that you have a close remedy but not the correct remedy mm-hmm. is that you'll have major exacerbations. So it's close enough to affect the vital force, to impact the vital force, but it's not the right, it's so not right that the vital force gets really angry.
Right. So Hahnemann would say now the new aggravations you can use to help
Absolutely.
You get back. And so those are signs and new, perhaps aggravated symptoms or new symptoms that say, okay, look at this. This is going to direct you to help select the correct remedy. So it's
yes.
helpful, actually, those aggravations to the diagnostician. But for the pet, they're really suffering and going into a difficult, uncomfortable place.
Right, exactly. So the other generalization about potency is if you're not super well trained, go lower. Stick with
right.
the 30C. Because I do a telephone consulting practice, and I'm also often just recommending things to people, and then they're doing some more work on their own. What's readily available in most cities and most states is 30C. Whole Foods, many others, have the Voiron setup. Voiron is one company that makes remedies, and they have 6C and 30C, usually, or just 30C. So that's what's most readily available.
Yes. And
therefore,
and
that's a good one to start with. It's a nice medium potency. If you go too low, say you have a dog with frantic itching and no pathology or no lesions, and you do a 6C, you may not, even if it's the correct remedy, you might not see anything happen because it's just too low. So 30C is a very good medium type of remedy that I feel comfortable with most people using. And frankly, I personally start a lot of my cases at a 30C. Not all of them by any means, but a lot of them. So it's a good medium potency to think about as your starting point.
That's very helpful because people then feel comfortable knowing that the majority of remedies that will be needed are accessible in their local health food store in the shop, because they do usually carry either 6C or 30C. And if they become familiar with 10, 20 to up to 50 remedies, then they have a really good toolkit at their disposal for covering most problems that they're going to come across.
Absolutely. Now, so the next piece that you talked about, partly related to giving the remedy, like how often to give it or how long, has to do with the key thing of evaluation of response to remedies. But before I talk about evaluation of response, I have to talk about case taking, because if you've not done a good job taking the case, you cannot evaluate the response to remedies accurately. The most important first step for you to do is to list all of the symptoms your animal has currently and quantify them. And if these are practitioners listening, then just shift that to all the symptoms your client's animal has currently and quantify them. Figure out a way to quantify them. So it could be my dog itches after every meal for 5 minutes, and when we go outside, my dog itches so much that on the walk he stops 5 times on every walk, 3 to 8 times on every walk to scratch himself, and I have to get him going again on the walk. Or it could be my cat drinks 8 times a day, and each time it's 2 or 3 sips. It could be on a scale of 0 to 10, with 10 being my dog just feels wonderful and has plenty of energy. The energy level now is a 3. So there are multiple ways of, oh, and then if you have lumps or bumps or hot spots, you want to measure them in multiple ways. It's the size of a small red grape. It's the size of a pea. It's the size of a, we always use foods for some reason. It's the size of a marble. The stool is the consistency of thick cream or cow plop, like that. So you want to be very specific of where you are right now. So that's number one, current symptoms. Number two, early warning signs of illness. So that's on the Academy for Veterinary Homeopathy website, theavh.org, and also on my website. And also, we did a show on this earlier. So it's on the Homeopathy World Community. Click on the lady with the hat. And so one of the things then is looking at the early warning signs. Does your dog or cat have goop in the corner of its eyes or a little tiny black speck? Or are the eye corners perfectly clear when they wake up in the morning or during the day? Does your dog or cat have a body odor? Is your cat's hair matting? Is the dog's hair tangling a lot? There are loads of things that you would never go to your veterinarian. Some things people think is actually normal, like cats vomiting hairballs. It's like, oh, well, cats do that. Nope, healthy cats do not vomit hairballs. So you make a list of the early warning signs and quantify those. And in my book, The Healthy Animals Journal, there's a bookmark, and on the back of the bookmark, it actually walks you through doing a physical exam and covers many, although not all, of the early warning signs. And earlier in the book, there's a page that has more of the early warning signs. They just didn't all fit on the back of the bookmark. And number three, you now want to go back into the history of your animal and briefly make a timeline of what problems have there been in the past and approximately when were they, about what were the treatments. So you don't have to know that it was cefalexin or it was trimethoprim, sulfa, or you just need to know you got an antibiotic. You don't need to know if it's Depomedrol or Dexazone. You just need to know you got a steroid or an antihistamine. Of course, most of the treatments we have in conventional medicine are antis, because our goal in conventional medicine is to get rid of symptoms, stop the symptom from being there. So go back through your history. Particularly important is to note when vaccines were given. I had one client call me to schedule an appointment, and I said, what I'd like you to do first is make this timeline. And when she called, she had called because her dog was lethargic 3 to 6 months out of the year and felt great for 3 to 8 months. Now, that is something, as a conventional veterinarian, I would have had no idea what to do with. even as a holistic veterinarian, I was sort of going, now that's very interesting, because it wasn't every spring, every summer. It was very random, but it would last for months, and then the dog would be fine for months. After she did the timeline, she called, when she had her appointment, she said, Dr. Chambreau, I know what happens. I know the cause of this. Her dog would be vaccinated. 2 weeks later, she would develop a vaginal infection. She'd be on antibiotics for 2 to 4 weeks, and then she'd become lethargic for 3 to 6 months. And then she didn't vaccinate every year right on the year. So whenever she got, then the dog would feel fine until she was vaccinated again. And this had happened 3 times in a row. Vaccine, 2 weeks later vaginal, antibiotics, lethargic. 3 times in a row. So we knew for sure that the homeopathic remedy we chose needed to be a vaccine-related remedy, and we knew that an obstacle to cure in this dog was going to be continued vaccine. So that's the key to case-taking. Quantify current symptoms, current early warning signs, and past symptoms. Does that make sense, Debbie?
Yes, it does. It sounds very clear-cut, and your stories illustrate it fairly well for folks who might have something similar going on with their animal, that they notice these kind of trends and seasonal patterns or things that are changeable in their pet, and they haven't really figured out where to look for the root cause of it.
Yes.
So,
absolutely. Yeah. And it's really, I love homeopathy because it's just so straightforward. Now, it gets tricky when you try to apply all of this, but the basic principles are so straightforward for me compared to Chinese medicine, which seems to be much more complicated with five element theory and seven element and five principle, or and warm and cold. And it's beautiful and it works wonderfully, but I just feel it's easier to learn homeopathy. Okay, so then to what you were asking is the evaluation to the response of the remedy. If you've taken the case, it doesn't matter whether you're doing homeopathy or Reiki or Chinese medicine or conventional medicine or surgery, or doesn't matter what treatment you're using. Doesn't have to be homeopathy. If you've taken the case, you'll then be able to tell if whatever treatment you've selected could be just diet change, could be a super safe flower essence. I had a client call me the other day whose cat had a problem, and I forget what the problem was, and for some reason she gave larch flower essence from the Bach line, and she said the physical problem went away and the cat became a normal, friendly cat, and for the last 5 years had been aloof. And just 2 days on a flower essence, and this cat was completely normal. So then the question would be, was this cat deeply healed or merely temporarily healed? So regardless of the treatment you've used, what you want to look for, so I say evaluation of response to remedies, it's really any treatment. And it's cure, palliation, suppression, nothing, or sort of in between. So first let's do the easy ones. Nothing happens. There's no changes in the early warning signs, no changes in the current symptoms that you're seeing. And particularly important, and why on my bookmark I have them pre-printed in, is the energy level and the emotional state. So you may not see any change in the itching, but the dog is feeling great. I have a cat right now I'm treating for an upper respiratory problem, and when she reported in today, she said that the nose is now pretty consistently green discharge, and it's both nostrils where it was just sort of one, and there have been 4 episodes of bleeding, of some blood in the discharge, and there was something else. However, the cat's energy is 5 times better than it was, and the cat's eating better than it ever was. So now I'm going to be in a little dilemma to figure out what's going on here. So it's not always easy to apply these, but the principles themselves are clear. So cure is our goal. Cure means, remember, like cures like is the key for homeopathy. So cure means you've taken a remedy, you've taken the case, and you've done a treatment, whether it's homeopathy or something else, that's influenced the vital force to heal itself. Now, the vital force is what's been causing the symptoms. It's the energetic imbalance that causes symptoms. Chinese medicine, you see it as blockages in the qi. Chiropractic, you see it blockages of the energy flow. Homeopathy, an imbalance in the vital force. So when you get a cure, you've done a perfect match, and the symptom, the current symptoms resolve. Now, if the dog's been itching for 4 years, you might only get a 10% decrease in itching. It may take 4 months for the itching to completely go away, because however long they've been there, it's going to take a while for them to go away. If they've just had they've been sneezing for 3 days, the sneezing could stop within a day, within a few hours. So the symptoms disappear proportionate to how long they've been there. And the key important thing is the animal feels better overall. Increased energy, increased emotional state, increased activity, appetite is normal, and the early warning signs begin to go away. So you get a resolution of, you know, they stop vomiting hairballs. They stop having goop in the corner of their eyes. They stop eating dirt. So over time, all of these symptoms, the current symptoms, the early warning signs go away. And they do not return, and the animal continues to feel well. That's a cure. Now, moving towards a cure is that they feel better overall, and they're doing better, and the symptoms, most of the symptoms are resolved, but maybe you get 2 or 3 days of the symptoms being worse or some old symptoms from the past returning, or if you're treating an illness that's sort of inside the body, like pancreatitis or diarrhea or bladder problems, you may develop an outside-the-body illness like itching or a little bit of redness on the skin. So it's fine to see new symptoms. The homeopathic aggravation is something we definitely see that indicates something has happened. Occasionally, you'll get a miraculous cure. So with homeopathy, I've seen a remedy be given, the symptoms slowly and appropriately go away, and there's never an aggravation, and they just feel better, and they're great. Usually, there's some evidence that the energy field, the vital force, is producing some new symptoms or bringing back old symptoms. There's some guidelines. If we see symptoms moving from the inside to the outside or from the top to the bottom, so like itchy ears and then you get itchy back feet, that would be a good sign. Even if the itchy back feet are pretty bad. And it could be old symptoms coming back. So that's cure, and that's our goal. Moving towards a cure is sometimes the best we can do, especially when we're starting late on with our animals, or when you realize that our animals have been made very ill over the last 20 years, last 50 years, because of processed food, increasing number of vaccines, and environmental toxins increasing. They're sort of like the canaries in the mine showing us what's going to happen to us because we have a longer generational span than they do. So moving towards a cure may be the best you can do. And in that case, you're having to repeat the remedy. However, the symptoms, even though they return, they're not as bad, and the animal is feeling better overall, and those early warning signs are beginning to go away. So even if you have to repeat the remedy because symptoms come back, there's this overall feeling of, I'm really better.
Mm-hmm. So you as the caretaker of this animal, you have to really be noticing the emotional state, how they're, you know, whether the tail is wagging or the eyes look a little bit brighter. You have to be able to determine whether they are going toward a better state of being.
And the reason you can do that is because you did it when you were taking the case. You wrote down the initial symptoms, and part of writing down the initial symptoms was energy level and emotional state.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not always clear. I totally resonate with people who may write in with questions, and I hope you do, that say, this happened and this happened, and it seemed to contradict each other. Absolutely, it's not always clear, but at least we'll be clear on the basics, and then we try to apply it to each situation. Now, the tricky thing between palliation and cure, we'll see in a minute. So palliation is when you give a treatment and the symptoms stop very quickly, but they come back. Either right away, as soon as you stop the treatment, like a cat. My beginning intro to homeopathy was a cat who'd been on antibiotics for 3 years. And within 3 days of stopping antibiotics, anytime they tried over the 3 years, the cat would start having bladder problems again. So the cat had been continuously on antibiotics, except for a few times when they tried to stop, for 3 years. And the cat was not as healthy now as she was initially, and that's why they were even talking about maybe having to put her to sleep, because her health was deteriorating overall because of the continued antibiotics, because they weren't addressing the underlying energy field. And I gave an acute remedy, either Urtica Urens or Cantharis. It was my first introduction, and the cat was off antibiotics and fine for the next 9 months that I was at the practice. So the antibiotics had been palliating, and any kind of treatment can palliate, and that's where the symptoms go away quickly, too quickly, and they have to, and the treatment, whatever it is, has to be continued. Now, sometimes it's a little hard to tell again between the palliation and cure, because as I said, moving towards a cure, you sometimes have to repeat the remedy. But with palliation, they don't feel better overall. Now, they may temporarily feel better. So if you've got this horrible red inflamed ear, or you've got this high fever and you feel punk, and you give steroids, you feel better, but only for a short time. And there's no evidence in those cases. They may feel better because the pain has stopped, but there's no evidence that the early warning signs are getting better, that there's a protracted period of feeling better. Is that clear?
Yes, it is.
Okay, palliation, symptoms keep coming back. You have to continue with the treatment. Now,
but sometimes would you then use steroids just to give some relief, even though, you know, it's not really the best thing for the immune system?
In my practice, I would say I've had to use steroids on animals I was treating less than 1% of the time. Less than 0.5% of the time.
Because I'm always.
We can always do something else. There's rescue remedy, Reiki, another remedy, Chinese medicine. There's always something else to try instead of steroids. But there have been an occasion, sometimes with mange cases when I haven't been successful, we've had to go to ivermectin or Revolution or something like that. But then I know I'm palliating. And then we come in and continue on the journey of health to move forward. Now, the worst thing that can happen is suppression. Suppression is similar to palliation in that the current symptoms go away really fast. However, what then happens at some point, either immediately, a week, 2 weeks, a month, 2 months, or even longer down the line, more severe symptoms appear. So arnica is a great remedy to treat coughs. So somebody who gives arnica and it's the incorrect remedy for a dog that has pain, maybe this dog's, you know, really got a lot of pain and you give the arnica and you're just amazed within 2 seconds the dog is not in pain anymore and is up and bouncing around, and then 2 weeks later starts a deep cough. That could be because the arnica weakened the energy field. Or I had a dog who was itching, and I did my best to prescribe the right remedy. She calls back in her follow-up a week later, 2 weeks later, and she said, Dr. Chambreau, you are a miracle worker. I got to tell you, I gave the remedy, and this is probably a 30C or a 200. I gave the remedy, the one dose, and the itching stopped within 3 minutes. I mean, it was a miracle. And already I'm thinking, uh-oh, this is either palliation or suppression, because the dog had been scratching for 3 years. It just mm-hmm. doesn't go away in 3 minutes. So I asked her very carefully, and the dog felt better. Dog didn't have initially any of the early warning signs that I could find. And I had to really dig and delve and ask. And finally she said, oh, I'm glad you asked me again. She's been biting the children this week.
Mm-hmm.
So the itching stopped, and 10 days later she started biting the children. Now, it's possible that that was a curative reaction. If she had been very timid, very sick, and the kids were physically abusing her, then biting them now could be a sign that she was better. But in careful questioning, the kids weren't abusing her, and the way she was biting and how she was biting and what she was biting, it was clearly that now we have a mental symptom. So we've moved from a skin symptom to a mental symptom, a more serious symptom. So then I took, as you talked about earlier, Debbie, I took the new symptom of aggression, and with the prior symptoms I'd used about the itching, and prescribed a new remedy. The aggression went away immediately because it was had just appeared, and the itching came back within a few days to a week, and then the itching slowly began to go away.
This is very helpful because people have expectations, and very often just a person coming to see me will say, what do I expect to happen, or how long is it going to take before I see something? So you've kind of given us an example that if it's been a deep-seated long-term problem, it's going to take time, and we have to encourage patients to see the evolution of that mm-hmm. disease, those disease symptoms leaving the body. And that if we do see something that's so dramatic, we're going to start, I'm going to hear my little voice that's going to be Christina saying, uh-oh, what happened?
And sometimes it is miraculous. I mean, it does happen sometimes, but you got to really check it out.
Right. You have to call Christina. So also, we have about 5 to 6 minutes left in today's show, and I think that we should, again, encourage people to find out how to get in touch with you, how to learn about your programs that are coming up that you've planned for this summer, and that they can visit. They can see you in person and,
right.
you know, give
and
you a
the,
hug. And
the key thing of just thinking about this is imagine spending – like in the buoy class, imagine spending an entire day learning how to take the case of an animal. How do you know if heat or cold makes the ear feel better? You have to use a hot compress or a heating pad. How do you know if touch makes it better or worse? You have to do that. They can't tell you. It's just like treating infants. Pediatric homeopaths have the same challenges that animal homeopaths do. And then to have a whole day learning how to use the repertory, the index of symptoms, to look things up. Or even in the four-hour course, to have, you know, a whole half an hour talking about case-taking instead of the 5-10 minutes we gave it here. So I would love to see people spread the word about these classes, just because the people putting them on put a lot of time, energy, and money into figuring a place to have the class, in scheduling different instructors, myself or others, and I want to make sure that they do well. So I really want to have as many people show up for these classes as possible.
Right. And people need feedback. They need to know that what they're doing is worthwhile and is giving to the community something that is needed. So I've found your website. And where it says ChristinaShambro.com/events, this is where you have a listing of all the upcoming holistic animal health classes in person. And it's great that folks can talk about their own individual pets and have those kinds of questions answered also. So you've got 2012, you've got May 6th in Portland, Oregon, Introduction to Homeopathy.
Do I have the correct time, 1 to 5?
1 to 5.
Good. Okay.
It says 1 to 5, but it doesn't say p.m., which would tell us that it's an hour. Register by emailing Dr. Moore at drwillowmoore@yahoo.com. You could also, it says click here, but you don't have a clickable, so you have to get that on there. And then June 2nd and 3rd in Buckfield, Maine. It should be a nice time of year, right?
Yeah, Maine's beautiful then.
Yeah, Introduction to Homeopathy for Animals, Taking the Case, Using the Repertory and the Materia Medica. So these are things for people who are new. The repertory is going to have the list of symptoms, what we call the rubrics, to look up in all the different organ systems of the body, even including the mind. And then the Materia Medica, it's a collection of all of the remedies, and I usually call it an encyclopedia.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
I feel like it is.
Yeah, it is.
Of all of the remedies.
It is a homeopathic encyclopedia.
Yes, and it has listed in there documentation from the clinical and approving symptoms from each remedy. Then you have also, you're going to teach selecting the remedy and the potency and how to administer. And that's what we've been talking about quite a bit today. Then we have evaluation of response to the remedy and obstacles to cure in animals. And, of course, we can transfer what we learn to our own lives and how we see ourselves. So this, you know, it really covers the gamut of how to get started. Then you have June 16th to the 22nd in Bowie, Maryland, with a linkable click to the holistichealthcareforpets.org. And June 16th, you have something special, holistic animal care. So is that a one day?
That's a one day.
A one day.
And then introduction to homeopathy for animals is one day.
Okay. And then,
June 18th to 22nd is intermediate. That's where we're doing the whole case, et cetera.
Right. And so, again, tell us who might be interested, what kind of person might be interested to take these courses?
Any pet guardian who's committed to improving the health of their animals, a veterinarian, veterinary technicians, veterinary groomers, kennel owners, trainers, people who work with dogs, cats, horses, birds, fish. And I've had human homeopaths take my classes to learn how to coach their patients on working with their animals.
Okay. So we're going to close today's show, and I'm going to start up in another minute or so with Alan Phillips talking about the highlights and current events regarding vaccinations. And we've got a lot of heavy-duty stuff coming up here, and I'm sure folks who are interested in caring for themselves, their pets, their health of the community and the world will be interested in getting involved in this discussion. So we're going to sign out, and I'm wishing you great luck with the people signing up for your classes.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Pet Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopaths Debbie Brock and Dr. Christina Chambreau. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when show airs, share with friends on Facebook and Twitter, and send in your comments and questions. See you next time!